puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time once again for Abandoned Manitoba, perhaps a late summer edition, you could call it. Gordon Goldsborough is here from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are we talking about this week?
Well, several months ago, I was contacted by someone who owns a charming old farmhouse in rural Manitoba. Sadly, the house is currently unoccupied, and at some point it was broken into, likely by someone hoping to find valuables inside, although there was essentially nothing of great value left behind. But in the process, they severely damaged one of the house's exterior doors. The owner reached out to ask if I could offer any advice on replacing the door. This week, we're discussing the only suggestion I could think of giving her, a place that is just around the corner from the studio here on Yonge Street, the Old House Revival Company.
Yes, very good. Our neighbor here in downtown Winnipeg. So a place that sells used items, salvaged items from old buildings, right?
Indeed. But before we get into that, I'd like to step back briefly and talk about the building in which the company is housed.
Okay.
It's a three-story brick structure with a full basement. And curiously, there is a freight elevator to move from one floor to another, but I'm told that there are no stairs.
Oh. Yeah.
So, you know, the only way you could get from floor to floor, apparently at one time anyway, was to take the elevator.
Right.
Now, of course, this would be completely unacceptable today, but I suppose it wasn't an issue when the building was constructed in 1910, so 115 years ago.
So, obviously, it's to warehouse things, right? What was the building at that time?
It was known originally as the Eastman Building, named for the company that had commissioned its construction, George A. Eastman and Company, a manufacturer of trunks and other luggage as a warehouse for its products. Over the next few years, it went through a succession of owners. There was the G.R. Taylor & Company, another manufacturing plant for trunks. In 1914, the Mickelson's Drug and Chemical Company. It was a manufacturing plant for the Broadway Blouse Company. I assume they made shirts of various kinds from 1915 to 1919. Finally, it achieved stable ownership in early 1920 when it became home to the Fort Garry Dyers and Cleaners Limited, later known simply as Fort Garry Cleaners, and they were there until 1969, so almost a half a century. However, it's been a place to buy antiques and collectibles for the next half century because in 1970, the next long-term occupant was auctioneer Peter Wachniak, who seems to have specialized in such things. I bought quite a few old books and pieces of ephemera from Peter, and he was there from 1970 to around 2003 or early 2004. I couldn't tell for sure. The present owner took over in 2004, that I know for sure, as the Old House Revival Company, at which time the building was in considerable disrepair. So kudos to the owner, who undertook lots of repair work, repaired the roof, replaced the 95-year-old rope for that freight elevator. Whoa, I don't know if I would have been wanting to take it. Added staircases so you could actually walk from floor to floor easily, and turned the upper two floors into an antique mall.
Yeah, I always wonder. I see the sign. What is an antique mall?
Yeah, and I wondered that too. I think it's a really clever idea. Those floors are divided into small spaces of various sizes that are rented to people for independent sales shops.
Ah, gotcha.
Now, at first, there were seven vendors. Today, there are 40, the youngest of whom, I'm told, is 15 years old. The individual vendor determines the theme of their shop and stocks it with merchandise, putting a price tag on each item along with their unique vendor ID. If a customer sees an item in a shop that they wish to buy, they take it to the sales counter on the main floor, and there it's rang up, and the money is credited to whichever vendor provided it. There's no haggling over price because, well, the vendors themselves aren't there. Vendors refresh their shop's content roughly twice a month. Most of them, items offered for sale generally evoke some kind of nostalgia. You know, although specific time periods does vary from shop to shop. By the look of what I saw during a visit a few weeks ago, it tends to start from about the 1960s or so, but there might be specific items from earlier. Now, the Old House Revival Company, the landlord, if you will, does impose a few rules on items that cannot be sold by these shops. So things like precious metals, due, I suppose, to the potential for theft.
Okay.
Guns and knives, for I think fairly obvious reasons. Taxidermy, and I'm not sure about this one. I'm thinking primarily for maybe ethical or legal reasons. And what we might call socially questionable items, such as adult magazines. Wendy Ryder, manager of the store, told me during my visit that she has a long waiting list to become a vendor. And in fact, there's four or five of the vendors that have been there since the beginning, 20 years ago. It's a neat concept.
Where does the old house part of the name come in then?
Well, the main floor of the building and the basement are the domain of the owner, and the items there have a little bit older vintage. They generally come from about the 1930s and earlier. Much of the merchandise arises from salvage operations at old buildings that are undergoing renovation or maybe are being demolished. Most of the salvage, well, I asked, and they said most of it comes from Winnipeg, but sometimes farther afield. It really depends on who's doing the work, if they're inclined to want to, you know, sell or barter the items that they're getting.
So tell us what sort of items they do have when you went through the building.
I spent over an hour browsing, and I found a whole lot of things like, well, interior doors, windows, cold air return covers, cast iron heat registers, a whole collection of pressed metal ceiling tiles. You know those beautiful ones they had in the ceilings of old buildings? Various shapes, sizes, and patterns. They had stained glass. They had door and window hinges and knobs, light fixtures, switch plates, glass lampshades, wooden flooring and moldings, decorative items, furniture, tools, like a whole potpourri of stuff. Really quite wonderful. One of the items that I found especially interesting was a cross and a Gothic lectern, both made of oak, that had been salvaged from St. Matthew's Anglican Church. I guess they were upgrading. They didn't need the old ones, and so they sold them to the Old House Revival Company. They were on sale, in fact, 40% off at the time of my visit, but who knows? Maybe they're gone now. But there was an old wooden phone booth from the Manitoba telephone system. I thought, wow, I'd love to have that in my house, you know, and I would say that anyone undertaking a restoration of an old house would probably find something useful among the eclectic collections there. And, you know, frankly, say, I found it quite tempting, too.
I'm guessing Mrs. Goldsboro doesn't want a wooden phone booth in her house.
That's true, yes.
So what did you find tempting?
Well, Wendy Ryder told me that a lot of people browse the wares for entertainment value alone, you know, not to find replacement items for their old house.
Right.
And they frequently end up buying things that they didn't know they wanted when they arrived. A common response, she told me, is that this is not what I came looking for. And I say, I felt that because I was a whole lot of things that I was inclined to buy, even though I never thought of that when I walked in the door.
Right, right.
You know, most of the house parts would not suit a relatively recent house like mine, but I did see a lot of things that would be great conversation starters. And for a collector of specific items, it might be a good place to enrich one's collection. I don't know what it means, but Wendy told me that most of those who come looking for specific collectibles are men.
Right. Yeah. Whose wives don't want wooden phone booths in their house either.
Yes, I think that's true.
So the initial person that you were talking to had her door broken. Was she able to find a replacement?
I haven't been in contact with her since then. So I don't know if she actually contacted the Old House Revival Company, but I suspect that she won't find one there. Wendy Ryder told me that they don't tend to get a lot of exterior doors because they tend to weather badly. And so they're therefore not in saleable condition. Mm. But it does raise, I think, a thought-provoking question. Should owners of old buildings, especially ones in remote areas, keep them tightly locked to deter intruders? Now, one could argue that leaving a door unlocked allows passersby to see there's nothing of great value inside, and therefore it discourages theft and minimizes damage.
Right.
On the other hand, some people may vandalize simply because they can.
Right.
You know, and I've seen both approaches used with abandoned buildings in my travels, and frankly, I prefer leaving them unlocked. Of course, for the benefit of people like me, who are simply curious to see inside and have no malicious intent. I suppose it all comes down to whether you're an optimist or a pessimist, and I think you know which one I am.
Yeah, and I'm the opposite. thanks for that, Gordon. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Tell us what's up for next week.
Well, during my travels around Manitoba, I've come across countless former churches. Some have been repurposed, and others stand abandoned. Most were built by the province's predominant Christian denominations, things like Catholic, Ukrainian Orthodox, Baptist, Anglican, Presbyterian, United, and a host of others. But a few church buildings, both past and present, were constructed by less common faith communities. So, next week, we're going to explore some of these latter places of worship.
Very interesting. We'll be looking forward to that. Thank you, Gordon. We'll see you on the long weekend.
You betcha. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba.